from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here. Right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
This is where the nation gets its information. Glad you're on board, everybody, for America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for joining us today. We are broadcasting to you live from the nation's capital. It's Thursday, June 23rd. Here's what's happening.
For the last decade, we have spent $1 trillion on war at a time of rising debt and hard economic times. Now, we must invest in America's greatest resource, our people.
In announcing the Afghanistan withdrawal, President Obama said it's time to turn our attention back home.
We have a message today. Put jobs first.
As jobless claims rise once again, a top Democrat calls for more jobs.
We've got the most predictable financial crisis this country's ever faced coming. And the fact that we don't have a plan out of this president is a failure in leadership.
And the CBO says soon our debt will eclipse our GDP. One Republican says enough with the deficit spending.
We're sweeping the nation and watching the world for all the latest news.
And we are so glad and honored, truth be told, to have you choose us here at America's Radio News. Time for the top news stories of the day to get us started. Here's Lori London.
Chris Salcedo, thank you so much. Good to see you today, Chris.
And good to see you, too. Look at you. You know, it's the second day of summer. You're dressed like spring.
Well, it's spring-y, summer-y, like, out
there. You go. Yeah, very
all
nice.
Right. And all of you out there can see so well through the radio, so
yeah, that's
I hope you're
thing.
Enjoying that.
Yep.
The Energy Department says the U.S. is releasing 30 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as part of an international effort to make up for the loss in supply from the disruption in Libya's production. The release coincides with another 30 million barrels to be released in the coming month from other nations in coordination with the International Energy Agency. U.S. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu said the reserve's currently at a record 727 million barrels in storage. He said the situation in Libya, which the U.S. began bombing in March, but which has been under NATO control since May, has caused a loss of roughly 1.5 million barrels of oil per day, particularly light sweet crude from global markets.
The president of the United States outlining his withdrawal strategy from Afghanistan. So how's it being received over there on the ground? Well, the president of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, welcomed President Obama's decision to withdraw more than 30,000 American troops over the next year, calling it, quote, the right decision for the interest of both countries. Mr. Karzai said the Afghan people trust in the Afghan army and the police is growing every day, and preservation of this land is job for the Afghans. But local leaders and ordinary Afghan people expressed fears of civil war, renewed Taliban encroachments, and even government collapse when the United States leaves. In the mountain districts of eastern Afghanistan, Kandahar province, and in parliament, many expressed deep doubts. The chairman of parliament's internal security committee said, quote, I'm totally against Barack Obama's decision to cut the numbers of soldiers. Our national forces are not well trained and not well equipped.
James Whitey Bulger, an alleged Boston organized crime boss who was on the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitive list, has been captured. He's been on the run since 1995. Bulger, who was taken into custody with his longtime girlfriend, Catherine Elizabeth Gregg, will make a court appearance today, the first. The pair was arrested from a residence in Santa Monica, California. Well, on Tuesday, the FBI began airing a 30-second public service announcement centered on Gregg, who was wanted for harboring a fugitive. It listed some of her characteristics, such as the fact that she loves dogs, she goes to beauty salons, and she's had multiple plastic surgeries. Bulger was charged with 19 counts of murder, along with conspiracy to commit murder, extortion, drugs, and money laundering.
Records are made to be broken, and that is no exception in Minot, North Dakota. Minot residents are no strangers to flooding, and this one looks like it will be one for the record books. Experts predict water will rise 10 feet higher than a previous record set back in 1968. As the wall of water approaches the city, thousands of residents have evacuated in front of those rising waters. Minot Mayor Kurt Zimmerman tried to put the impending disaster into words.
This is a very sad time for the city of Minot. Think about your own home, how you would feel if you knew that this was coming down and was going to wipe you out. I know this community, and it's a fairly close-knit community, and they do hang together. They do take care of their neighbors, and they'll do it again.
Well, Federal Reserve Chair Ben Bernanke was a bit uncertain as to how we got to where we were in his or are in his second official press conference. Here he admits they really can't pinpoint the reasons.
We don't have a precise read on why this slower pace of growth is persisting. One way to think about it is that maybe some of the headwinds that have been concerning us, like you know, weakness in the financial sector, problems in the housing sector, balance sheet and deleveraging issues, some of these headwinds may be stronger or more persistent than we thought. What we say is that the temporary factors are in part the reason for the slowdown. In other words, part of the slowdown is temporary and part of it may be longer lasting. We do believe that growth is going to pick up going into 2012. But at a somewhat slower pace than we had anticipated in April.
President Obama said last night the original surge of 30,000 troops had clear objectives, and now he plans to fully recover that surge by next summer.
In one of the most difficult decisions that I've made as president, I ordered an additional 30,000 American troops into Afghanistan. When I announced this surge at West Point, we set clear objectives to refocus on al-Qaeda, to reverse the Taliban's momentum, and train Afghan security forces to defend their own country. I also made it clear that our commitment would not be open-ended and that we would begin to draw down our forces this July. Tonight, I can tell you that we are fulfilling that commitment. Thanks to our extraordinary men and women in uniform, our civilian personnel, and our many coalition partners, we are meeting our goals. As a result, starting next month, we will be able to remove 10,000 of our troops from Afghanistan by the end of this year. And we will bring home a total of 33,000 troops by next summer, fully recovering the surge I announced at West Point. After this initial reduction, our troops will continue coming home at a steady pace. By 2014, this process of transition will be complete, and the Afghan people will be responsible for their own security.
Coming up on America's Radio News, Ernest Istook. He's a political analyst here for America's Radio News. We'll talk to him about the president's speech last night and other things going on with our economy and our debt ceiling.
And House Majority Leader Eric Cantor has dropped out of deficit talks. We'll have more on that.
And we'll talk about how the Fed has lowered its outlook for economic growth here in the United States. All that coming your way next on America's Radio News.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News. Breaking news and the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
20 minutes past the top of the hour. This is where the nation gets its information. It's America's Radio News. Happy you're there. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for joining us today. Bipartisan negotiations over a deal to raise the debt limit entered a new chapter today as the Republicans' top negotiator, Majority Leader Eric Cantor, pulled out of talks. Cantor telling the Wall Street Journal negotiations hadn't necessarily broke down, but needed help from President Obama and Speaker Boehner to continue. An aide familiar with the talks says Boehner and Biden had made significant progress toward a deal, but that the majority leader felt that certain snags may be beyond their negotiating authority. As has been the case since the outset, the most contentious issues is likely revenues. Republicans have been as adamant about keeping tax increases off the table as Democrats have been insistent on their inclusion.
The Federal Reserve downgraded its outlook for the U.S. economy, lowering its prediction for annual growth to less than 3% of gross domestic product. The Fed now expects the economy will grow between 2.7% and 2.9% in 2011. That's down from a previous estimate of 3.1 to 3.3% that was held in April. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke acknowledged yesterday, that the recovery has hit a, quote, rough patch.
The parents of Casey Anthony do not believe she's innocent of charges. She killed her two-year-old daughter, Kaylee, in 2008. That from their attorney, who told CNN, George and Cindy Anthony do not, however, want their daughter to receive the death penalty for the killing, said attorney Mark Lipman. Casey Anthony is charged with 7 counts in her daughter's death, including first-degree murder. She could face the death penalty. Now, Lipman's bombshell statement to CNN's Gary Tuchman was discussed on AC360 Wednesday night. Now, it's unclear how the remarks could affect testimony that is scheduled to continue in Anthony's capital murder trial today.
Let's get you out to America's Radio News line. Standing by, Ernest Istook. He's a political analyst here for America's Radio News. Also served in Congress in Oklahoma's 5th District for 14 years. Also a fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Hey, Ernest, welcome back to America's Radio News.
Great to be with you and Lori once more, Chris.
Well, we just learned that Eric Cantor is bailing, doing something that's rather political, trying to get the president actually on the record as to what he favors in these debt ceiling negotiations. Where I think a lot of folks are saying the Republicans are going right is saying that sticking firm on no tax increases, where I think some folks are saying that Republicans are going wrong is their insistence that tax increases also equal these subsidies for big oil, for the ethanol companies. One has to point to one of the companies that has ties with the White House, GE, who made billions of dollars and paid no income taxes here in the United States. And the Republicans want to keep these folks from paying their fair share. How can that be a winning strategy?
Well, you know, when somebody pays taxes or doesn't pay taxes under the current system, it's because the current system is such a complicated mess. That's why the Heritage Foundation has tried to talk about ways to replace and fix the current system. But you need to have equal treatment for all energy producers and all companies. Oil and gas companies should get the same sort of tax treatment as other people. Ethanol should not be getting subsidies. And one of the things that's been holding back economic growth is that even when President Obama agreed to extend the current tax rates in December, he promised that he was going to raise them in the future. So everybody in business has been going around watching for the next shoe to drop.
Well, Ernest, let me challenge you something, Ernest.
Enough revenue that it spends too much.
Right, Ernest, let me challenge you on something. You said ethanol should not be receiving subsidies.
That's right.
A lot of folks have made the case that oil companies ought not be getting subsidies as well.
Well, the problem is what they are defining. What do you define as a subsidy? What do you define as a subsidy? If oil and gas gets the identical tax treatment as other companies, the president calls it a subsidy. That's
well,
the problem.
Taxpayer people, money is how I would define a subsidy.
Well,
any taxpayer money going to a private enterprise.
But that's not what they're getting. They're saying that the tax treatment of their finances, which the things that are the same as other companies, they redefine as a subsidy. That's the problem.
Okay.
That they're not using the standard definition of what is subsidy. Now, things that are peculiar to the oil and gas industry you can look at, but when they define as a subsidy to treat them like every other company, that's totally wrong. It's playing games with words, and it's trying to fool people about what's really going on. The problem, again, is not that government doesn't have enough revenue. It's that it spends too much, and that's what Congressman Cantor has said to people. Look, if you want to have some discussions about revenue, you need to get the president in the room rather than trying to pass the buck to other people so that he doesn't claim that his fingerprints are on the efforts to increase taxes and a down economy. You need to get the president actually getting his hands dirty in this process. All he's doing now is passing the buck to Joe Biden and everybody else.
Well, now let's turn to the president's speech last night. We're speaking with Ernest Istook, political analyst for America's Radio News, fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and former congressman who represented Oklahoma's 5th Congressional District for 14 years. Sir, the president's big speech last night on Afghanistan about pulling the withdrawal of troops, but still many more will be staying. Would you say it was a moderate move for the president? He's getting criticism on both sides, but for very different reasons. Would you say it was moderate and expected?
I would not call it moderate. I would call it expected. He telegraphed when he went along with what the generals recommended and said, okay, we're going to have this surge of some 30-something thousand soldiers in Afghanistan. The surge has been success. It has not stabilized. The military tells us we shouldn't pull these people out at this time because we haven't stabilized the situation and locked in what we've gained as well as finishing the job. I think what the president has done is purely political, and he's trying to kind of have it both ways. And I realize that Afghanistan is not popular, but making decisions about a war based upon politics, not on military considerations, will make Afghanistan into another Vietnam situation. And that's blatantly what the president is doing here. When you send people in to fight and to die, you owe it to them to finish the mission that you sent them to accomplish. And all it right. is not. The death of bin Laden doesn't change that.
Ernest Istook, political analyst here for America's Radio News, also a fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Served Congress for Oklahoma's 5th District as a congressman for 14 years, sir. Appreciate your perspectives.
Thanks,
we'll talk
Rick.
To
Thanks,
you next
Lori.
Week. You bet. Coming up on America's Radio News, the jobs picture getting worse here in the United States. We have the report.
And the U.S. and the International Energy Agency will tap into oil reserves.
And Ken Goode makes his way into America's Radio News next.
All the news at Hot Topics when we come back to America's Radio News. Broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News.
34 minutes past the top of the hour. This is America's Radio News, where the nation comes to get its information. Glad to have you on board, everybody. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for joining us today. It is Thursday, June 23rd. Here's what's happening.
Over the last decade, we have spent $1 trillion on war. At a time of rising debt and hard economic times. Now, we must invest in America's greatest resource, our people.
In announcing the Afghanistan withdrawal, President Obama says it's time to turn our attention back home.
We have a message today. Put jobs first.
As jobless claims rise once again, a top Democrat calls for more jobs.
We've got the most predictable financial crisis this country's ever faced coming. And the fact that we don't have a plan out of this president is a failure in leadership.
And the CBO says soon our debt will eclipse our GDP. One Republican says enough with the deficit spending.
We're sweeping the nation and watching the world for all the latest news.
It is the bottom of the hour here on America's Radio News. Time for the top stories, and here's Lori London.
Thanks, Chris. President Obama's withdrawal plan for Afghanistan marks the beginning of the end of a troop-intensive approach to countering a Taliban insurgency that, until recent months, had fought the U.S. and its NATO allies to a standstill. As the war grinds on, the Obama administration will shift the U.S. military's focus more toward targeting terrorist leaders while giving Afghans more of the lead in fighting and eventually reconciling with the Taliban. And what remains in doubt is the end game, finding a political solution to the conflict.
More bad news on the economic front as far as jobs are concerned. New U.S. claims for unemployment benefits rose last week, suggesting little improvement in the labor market this month after unemployment stumbled in May. Initial claims for state unemployment benefits climbed 9,000 to a seasonally adjusted 429,000, according to the Labor Department. The prior week's figure was revised up to 420,000. Economists polled by the Reuters news service had forecast claims to edge up to 415,000 from a previously reported count of 414,000.
Well, dozens of gay couples are planning to converge on Albany, New York today to witness what would be a historic vote to legalize gay marriage there, the sixth date to do so and a potential bellwether in the national gay rights movement. But for that to happen, Governor Andrew Cuomo's considerable political skills will be tested as never before to engineer one of the biggest social changes in a generation. The Democrat has been using a kind of shuffled or shuttle diplomacy to privately test proposals for additional religious exceptions within the state's Senate's Republican majority. He's talked to individual senators or small groups of lawmakers, privately breaking down barriers and letting them take his message to others in the Republican caucus.
Let's get you out to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by there is Ken Goode. He's the managing director of the National Security and International Policy Program at American Progress. Ken, welcome back to America's Radio News.
Hi, Ken. Welcome.
Hi, Lori. Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you saw the president's speech last night, I'm assuming, so he laid out his plans for our withdrawal from Afghanistan. Give me your first impressions.
Well, my first impression is I'm cautiously optimistic that we've really turned the corner here and we're headed in the right direction now. You know, I probably would have favored some more troops out now and more troops out in the next year. But I think the president's right when he says we are at our strongest point in this conflict since really the fall of the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Osama bin Laden now dead, Al-Qaeda pretty much scattered and the Taliban momentum reversed, it's clear that U.S. and international forces have really taken this just about as far as we can go on the military side. And now it's really time for the Afghans to step up and take responsibility for securing their own country, and we can begin to draw down our forces.
You know, Ken, what's striking some folks is that, you know, during the Bush administration, how a lot of folks on the left wing here in the country basically said that Bush was taking his eyeball off Afghanistan, that he was devoting a whole bunch of unnecessary resources into Iraq. And some people, even lawmakers, went as far as to say that Afghanistan was the good war. It was the war where we should have been. And now that this president has taken over, there seems to be increasing calls now actually from both sides of the aisle to get us out of there. What do you think the rationale is for that? Why the change of heart all of a sudden? Is it just Osama bin Laden?
Well, I think the death of bin Laden certainly has something to do with it, but also the fact is that we're approaching our 10th year in Afghanistan, and it's just completely natural for people to begin to be weary of a war effort that, you know, seemed to have no end, and now we are really at the beginning of the end here. So when we see what has been a bit of a shift, and I wouldn't necessarily describe any conflict as good or bad wars, I think it's more of the forgotten war that we saw in Afghanistan. And really what we saw was when troops started to shift out of Afghanistan to devote to the invasion of Iraq, that mission started to crumble. And what needed to be done was refocusing our attention on the people who actually attacked us on September 11th, and the president has done that in both Afghanistan and Pakistan. And Osama bin Laden is dead. Al-Qaeda is on the run. We're starting to see results. And now, you know, as we approach this 10-year anniversary of September 11th and the 10-year anniversary of the conflict in Afghanistan, which follows just a few weeks after that, it's an appropriate time to start bringing our troops home. I mean, we've got 100,000 troops there now. And we need to start getting them back here, and we need to stop spending $100 billion a year in Afghanistan and start making the kinds of investments in the United States that we need to be making.
We're speaking with Ken Goode, Managing Director of the National Security and International Policy Program at American Progress. Ken, there's been a lot of talk lately, or mention, shall we say, of talks with the Taliban. I know the White House says this is sort of calling it a necessary evil in the way forward. There are a lot of people on the right that think it's just outrageous that we would talk to so-called what many are referring to as terrorists. I know there is a difference between Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, but what do you say to the criticism of that?
Well, look, I think it's clear that, you know, after 10 years of fighting, after 10 years of Americans fighting and 30 years of fighting in Afghanistan, that a total military solution is just impossible to obtain. So any resolution to this conflict is going to be done at the negotiating table. We have to find a way to bring responsible parties in Afghanistan, and clearly there are members of the Taliban who are unreconcilable and are never going to want to accept any control over Afghanistan other than Taliban control, and those people are not part of these negotiations. But there are also people in Afghanistan who are fighting the Afghan government and fighting the United States who simply want an end to the conflict. We have to take advantage of that and find a way to get a negotiated settlement that can be a sustainable peace. You know, the U.S. military and international forces have pretty much taken the military side of this as far as it can go. I mean, we have regained the momentum against the Taliban, but what we are facing there is a hostile local force that has support and sanctuary across an international border in Pakistan. It's completely impossible for the United States or any military force to ultimately totally defeat that enemy. And so what we have to realize is that a negotiated settlement is going to be what leads to a sustainable peace in Afghanistan. And unfortunately, yes, the Taliban are a bunch of bad actors, but they're the enemy that we're fighting. And we have to negotiate with them if we're going to get out of this and have any kind of sustainable peace in that country.
Some are saying that the president's speech last night was purely politics, that, you know, he's not listening to the military members on the ground that are saying stay with the mission. But do we even know what the mission is anymore, and why? What would be the case for staying?
Well, look, I think we saw what the end of the counterinsurgency side of the mission in Afghanistan last night. I mean, clearly the president is shifting more towards an emphasis on tracking down our terrorist enemies, training the Afghan forces to take on the responsibility of frontline responsibility of fighting the Afghan or fighting the Taliban. So we're really seeing the shift away from counterinsurgency and more towards a counterterrorism and training mission for U.S. forces. But on the question of politics, look, I think if the president was wanting to be responsive to politics, we would have seen a much higher drawdown than his 10,000 by the end of this year and 33,000 by the end of next summer. I mean, when you look at the polls, it's clear that the American people are tired of this war, and it's clear that the American people want our troops to be coming out at a fairly rapid pace. And I think that's why you're seeing Republicans in their presidential nominating process kind of all over the map. You've got John Huntsman on the left here urging for a dramatic drawdown. You got Mitt Romney looking like he's casting around, seeing which way the wind is blowing. And then you've got Tim Pawlenty there attacking the president from the right.
So, hey, don't forget Ron Paul, man.
Don't forget Ron Paul, who's, you know, all
he wants him
right
out.
Now,
he wants him out yesterday, man.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, what we're seeing here, you know, is I think the president has decided that we've got to begin the end of this conflict. He wants to be responsive and respectful for our military leaders and the servicemen in Afghanistan who just made unbelievable and incredible sacrifices over these last 10 years. But he's the commander in chief, and he has to keep the big picture in mind, and not just the tactical situation that's going on the ground in Afghanistan, but what our broader strategic interests are in the region and our broader strategic interests around the world. And that, frankly, leads to a decision to bring some of the troops home now, next year, and hopefully more rapidly in the coming years.
Ken Goode, Managing Director of the National Security and International Policy Program at American Progress. Always appreciate your perspectives here on America's Radio News, Ken. We'll talk again soon.
Yep. Thanks very much, Chris. Thanks, Lori.
All right. Coming up here on America's Radio News, not only has Eric Cantor left the talks about the debt ceiling, now we're learning John Kyle, Senator, also leaving these talks. What does this mean? Will we get a deal here up on Capitol Hill to address our ballooning deficit? The looming crisis, everyone admits, is headed our way. We'll talk about it coming up next.
And on the run since 1995, James Whitey Bulger, an alleged Boston organized crime boss, nabbed in California.
And Hispanics in Washington, D.C., falling behind their peers in math and reading. That report comes your way next on America's Radio News, where the nation's news breaks.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news so you don't have to. If it breaks today, hear it today when we come back to America's Radio News. You know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
And welcome back, everybody. Maybe a sign that things are going south in the debt crisis negotiation. Not only has Eric Cantor left these talks with Vice President Joe Biden, we're hearing John Kyle, Senator John Kyle from Arizona, also walking away. We'll hear from John Boehner here in mere moments. But again, what is the status of these talks here on Capitol Hill, Lori London, with this debt ceiling debate? We will see as time marches on. We've actually put in some phone calls to both of those Republican lawmakers' offices.
All right. Well, meanwhile, aligning yourself too closely to the Tea Party could be a great way to lose an election in Florida, apparently. So says a recent poll by Gainesville, Florida-based polling firm War Room Logistics. In the poll, registered Florida voters said 2-1 that the Tea Party did not represent their views. War Room's Alex Patton says it could pose a real danger to Republican candidates. Democrats and independents both gave the Tea Party the thumbs down, with independent voters holding unfavorable views of the far right movement 3-1. Typically, Florida elections are decided by independent voters, and the only constituency still in favor of the recent tide of Tea Party politicians elected in the fall of 2010 are Republicans, 68% of whom view the Tea Party favorably.
For the first time, minorities make up a majority of the babies in the United States, part of a sweeping race change and a growing age divide between mostly white older Americans and predominantly minority youths that could reshape government policies. Preliminary census estimates also show the share of African American households headed by women made up of mostly single mothers, now exceed African-American households with married couples, a sign of declining U.S. marriages overall, but also continuing challenges for black youths without involved fathers. Findings based on the latest government data offer a preview of the final 2010 census results being released this summer that provide detailed breakdowns by age, race, and householder relationships such as same-sex couples. Demographers say the numbers provide the clearest confirmation yet of a changing social order, one in which racial and ethnic minorities will become the U.S. majority by mid-century.
Representatives Barney Frank, a Democrat, and Ron Paul, a Republican, will introduce legislation today to the U.S. House of Representatives that ends the federal prohibition on marijuana. The Oakland Tribune reporting that the bill would limit the federal government to enforcing cross-border or interstate smuggling laws and allow people to grow, possess, use, or sell marijuana in states where it is legal to do so. Although over a dozen states have legalized the use of marijuana for medical reasons, it's still outlawed under the Federal Controlled Substance Act. The legislation authored by Frank and Paul would allow each state to propose and enforce its own marijuana laws without federal interference.
A disturbing trend in the nation's capital being reported by the Washington Times. Hispanic students are struggling to catch up to their white counterparts in reading and math proficiency, and Hispanic students in the District of Columbia suffer from the largest performance gap in the country. That's according to a major new study that was released yesterday. On average, Hispanic fourth graders scored 25 points below white students in reading and 21 points lower in math, according to the National Center for Education Statistics. That's an arm of the U.S. Education Department. The figures taken from the 2009 standardized test scores show the gap in scores has hardly budged since 1990.
Well, Lindsay Lohan, Chris, failed a court-ordered alcohol test last week and will have to go before a judge again for a probation violation hearing. That's today.
Unexpected.
Oh, yeah. Lohan's failed test, which the source said took place on June 13, comes while the address is confined. Or, excuse me, I'm saying all these weird words today that aren't right.
The actress?
The actress. Mm-hmm. No, I said address. I think I'm having speech issues today. Confined to her Venice Beach, California home because of a jail sentence imposed last month. The actress will appear before an L.A. County judge today. And that's the same judge who sentenced her to 120 days in jail after she pleaded guilty to stealing a necklace.
All right. Earlier today, Congressman Eric Cantor, he walked out of budget talks with the vice president of the United States. Speaker of the House John Boehner said the talks will not turn serious until Democrats take tax raises off the table.
I talked to the majority leader about these talks for the last several months. And I know the frustration that he feels when Democrat members continue to want to bring tax hikes into this conversation and insist that we've got to raise taxes on the American people. And I think Mr. Sanders made it clear that these conversations could continue if they take the tax hikes out of the conversation.
Senator Patty Murray, a Democrat from Washington, says the debt deal needs to include a real jobs measure that isn't just about slashing the Republicans, as the Republicans want to do, but also investing in American workers.
I join my colleagues in calling for the debt limit deal being negotiated right now to include a real jobs measure. It can't just be about slashing. It also needs to be about investing in jobs and workers here in America, because budgets are more than just numbers on a page. They reflect our values as a nation. They are about real people with real lives who want policies that work for them. So again, we absolutely need to tackle the deficit and debt, but we are not going to simply slash our way to prosperity. And while we have to make responsible cuts, we can't do that on the backs of working families and the most vulnerable among us.
This story out of San Diego, coming up from the San Ysidro border crossing near that area. After Border Patrol agents shot dead an illegal immigrant throwing rocks and boards with nails in them from atop a Mexican border wall, Sean Moran, Vice President of National Border Patrol Local 1613, explained that this amounted to a biblical stoning.
For people that are sitting at home or sitting in a comfortable office, it's easy to say when you get a rock thrown at you that you should not respond with deadly force. But we're not talking about pebbles that you do landscaping with or something like that. These are bricks. These are chunks of concrete. This is a biblical stoning. There are still countries in this world that use stones to kill people. And unfortunately, there are hundreds and thousands of rocks along the U.S.-Mexico border, and the illegal aliens, when they are trying to get away or distract our agents, they often resort to throwing these rocks. If I see one coming at my partner or coming at me, I'm going to respond with whatever force I need to use to protect myself or to protect my partners. And that's what happened here.
Much more on the way, ladies and gents. Don't go anywhere. America's Radio News continues.
The big stories and the hot topics are all week. Live from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here. Right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
6 minutes past the top of the hour, coming to you live from your nation's capital, Washington, D.C. It's America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for joining us today on a Thursday. It's Thursday, June 23rd. Here's what's happening.
Starting next month, we will be able to remove 10,000 of our troops from Afghanistan by the end of this year. And we will bring home a total of 33,000 troops by next summer.
The president lays out America's strategy for withdrawal from Afghanistan.
The poll numbers that Obama's been down lately and the election coming up, this is just another one of his strategies to try to get the votes. And he needs to keep our hands off of our men and women and let them successfully complete their mission.
But a Gold Star mom says she's tired of the president playing politics with the lives of our troops.
I think you find that the vast majority of law enforcement officers recognize the importance of this because their jails are being crowded by people who are illegally in our country, and it's costing them and their budgets at the local level a huge amount of money.
And defending a tough new immigration law in Georgia.
We're crossing the country and circling the globe to find all the breaking news. And welcome to it, everybody. It is 7 minutes past the top of the hour. It is time for the top stories of the news, and here is Lori London.
Well, thank you so much, Chris Salcedo. Well, it looks like two key Republicans have pulled out of a high-profile budget talks today, saying President Obama needs to address Democratic demands that tax increases are needed to reduce the nation's debt. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor says talks to raise the $14.3 trillion debt ceiling while cutting the budget won't go anywhere until Obama weighs in on requests for tax hikes that Republicans oppose. Senator John Kyle also withdrew from the talks in a joint statement with Republican leader Mitch McConnell. They said, quote, the White House and Democrats are insisting on, quote, job-killing tax hikes and new spending.
All right, the other big story today happens to be the speech that took place last night. The president of the United States articulating his strategy for withdrawal out of Afghanistan. How is that decision being viewed over there on the ground in Afghanistan? The president over there, Hamid Karzai, welcomed President Obama's decision to withdraw more than 30,000 American troops over the next year, calling it the right decision for the interest of both countries. Mr. Karzai said the Afghan people trust in the Afghan army and police is growing every day, and preservation of this land is the job of Afghans. But local leaders and ordinary Afghani people expressed fears of civil war, renewed Taliban encroachments, and even government collapse when the United States leaves. In the mountain districts of eastern Afghanistan, Kandahar, and in parliament, many expressed deep doubts. The chairman of parliament's internal security committee said, quote, I am totally against Barack Obama's decision to cut the numbers of soldiers. Our national forces are not well trained and not well equipped.
His name is James Whitey Bulger. He's an alleged Boston organized crime boss who was on the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitive list, and he's been captured. He was on the run since 1995. Bulger, who was taken into custody with his longtime girlfriend, Catherine Elizabeth Gregg, will make a first court appearance today. The pair were arrested from a residence in Santa Monica, California. Now, on Tuesday, the FBI began airing a 30-second public service announcement centered on Gregg, who was wanted for harboring a fugitive. The public service announcement listed her characteristics, such as the fact that she loves dogs, that she goes to beauty salons, and that she's had multiple plastic surgeries. Bulger was charged with 19 counts of murder, along with conspiracy to commit murder, extortion, drugs, and money laundering.
President Obama said last night that Afghanistan has a responsibility to protect its own country in ways that America shouldn't control.
The goal that we seek is achievable and can be expressed simply. No safe haven from which Al-Qaeda or its affiliates can launch attacks against our homeland or our allies. We won't try to make Afghanistan a perfect place. We will not police its streets or patrol its mountains indefinitely. That is the responsibility of the Afghan government, which must step up its ability to protect its people and move from an economy shaped by war to one that can sustain a lasting peace. What we can do and will do is build a partnership with the Afghan people that endures, one that ensures that we will be able to continue targeting terrorists and supporting a sovereign Afghan government.
Well, House Speaker John Boehner voicing his concern about President Obama's Afghanistan troop drawdown plan. Boehner says he's worried pulling too many out too quickly may jeopardize our success in the region.
The American people are a little bit weary about Afghanistan, and you can't blame them. We got a lot, 100,000 of our young men and women fighting in this desert over there. But remember why we're there. We're there because the Taliban had taken over Afghanistan. They had provided a safe haven to al-Qaeda. And as a result, al-Qaeda had safe ground in which to plan, train, and execute attacks on Americans and our allies around the world. The goal here is to make sure that they don't have that safe haven. And so we've got some work to do, but clearly the success that General Petraeus outlined is in fact a success. We're getting there, but we've got an awful lot invested here, and I'm concerned about any precipitous withdrawal of our troops that would jeopardize the success that we've made.
Congressman Jim Jordan, he's a Republican from Ohio, telling Fox News that America is getting dangerously close to becoming Europe with our debt crisis. He says that the cut, cap, and balance pledge that he had a hand in crafting is the best one to fix our broken economy.
Look, if we're not going to do the bold things that fix the country, we'd rather deal with the problem now.
Right.
I mean, we are headed, you know the numbers, the debt to GDP. Now, CBO just came out with some new numbers that look even worse than we suspected. So the debt to GDP ratio, deficit to GDP ratio, were comparable to the countries here in Europe who are having big problems right now. We're headed the same place if we don't fix it. So our position is, let's do the right things, both in the short term with cuts, in the midterm with caps, and then long term, let's fundamentally change America. We actually believe we have a chance for the first time in American history to pass a balanced budget amendment through the House and the Senate, send it to the states for ratification. Can you imagine if we actually get that done, the game-changing difference that will be for future generations and for this great country? We think it's that important, and that's why we've laid out our plan, and more people are coming on board.
Coming up in America's Radio News, the Obama administration making the decision to release 30 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. That decision is under fire from both Republicans and Democrats. We'll tell you about that coming up next.
And the Winklevoss twins, made famous in the movie The Social Network, end their legal battle against the founder of Facebook.
And we'll talk some tech with Brett Larson. He's a tech guru here at America's Radio News. What about that iPhone 5? It's all coming your way next on America's Radio News.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News. America's Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
It's 20 minutes past the top of the hour. This is America's Radio News. Get ready to get informed. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, an Afghanistan intelligence analysis concludes that U.S. Special Operations raids and special operations-led outreach to Afghan villages are producing tangible results, but that larger counterinsurgency projects like the billions of dollars spent to install a credible Afghan government are lagging. The Afghan National Intelligence Estimate produced earlier this year gives low marks to some of the set pieces of General David Petraeus' counterinsurgency campaign. The general will appear today before the Senate Intelligence Committee for a confirmation hearing on his nomination as the next CIA director.
The president making some news on a couple of fronts. Of course, we all know about the Afghanistan speech last night. Also, the president deciding to release 30 million barrels of oil out of the nation's strategic oil reserve. Well, that has drawn fire from both sides of the aisle. Republicans call the Obama administration's plan to tap the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as a political move, while some Democrats said the effort to ease shortages may be too little, too late. The U.S. release of 30 million barrels of oil accounts for half the amount the International Energy Agency plans to deliver to the market to ease shortages of Middle East supplies triggered by civil war in Libya, the Energy Department said today in a statement. Republicans joined the oil industry in saying the release wasn't needed and more drilling is needed. The plan would have been more timely had oil been released when the Libyan supplies were first disrupted, said Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee Chairman Jeff Bingaman, a New Mexico Democrat. The U.S. has 727 million barrels of crude oil stored in caverns along the Gulf of Mexico coast. The reserve was established to counter disruptions after the Arab oil embargo of 1973 and 74. The U.S. has released oil from those stocks 17 times since 1985, most recently in 2008 after Hurricanes Gustav and Ike struck the Gulf Coast.
Sarah Palin disputing online reports that she's canceled her bus tour of historic American sites, saying in a Facebook posting that her schedule will be tight for the next few weeks because she's been called for jury duty. Palin said her One Nation bus tour would resume when the time comes. She added she's looking forward to hitting the open road again. The 2008 vice presidential candidate traveled from D.C. to New England by bus in May in a trip that generated intense interest and fueled speculation about her national ambitions.
Well, since Obamacare was passed, there have been several, numbering over 1,000 waivers granted for that law. And during a press conference yesterday, Congressman Joe Walsh, a Republican from Illinois, he asked why health care reform needs a waiver if it's indeed as wonderful as Democrats claim that it is.
We catch a lot of grief sometimes because we call this health care legislation Obamacare. He told us this was the single most important piece of health care legislation since Medicare or Medicaid. He should be proud to have his name on here. And it is an outrage if this is such a wonderful piece of legislation that over 1,400 organizations, corporations, unions, and groups need to get a waiver from it.
When will Democrats begin to own the economy? Some are saying that they're blaming all of our economic woes on the Bush administration. Neil Cavuto of Fox News confronted Congressman Xavier Becerra on this one.
That is in the past. What I'm asking
that's not in the past.
No, what I'm asking you, Congressman, I'm asking you now, would there be anything on terms of these entitlements that you'd look at shaving or addressing right now?
Absolutely. But I would first tackle the biggest drivers to our deficits, which are the Bush tax cuts.
Fine. All right, so you just raise taxes. That would do it, right?
No. Let's put it this way.
One entitlement you would cut. One thing you would adjust.
If I could answer the question, Neil, if during the Clinton years, when we had the tax rates that I would propose we send them back to,
right,
we had 22 million jobs created during those 8 years, as opposed to during the Bush years, where we actually ended up losing net
jobs. So raise taxes, but leave these entitlements. So you're not going to give me one example of what you do on any of these entitlements.
I would put the tax rates back for those above middle income, back to where they were before.
Right. So you're not addressing anything.
I'm not saying about raising. I'm saying bringing them back to where they were before.
Okay, which is raising them. But you're not going to address any of these entitlements or any specific ideas.
Sure we are.
One example. I'm begging you for one example.
There are a number. I've already told you.
At least one Democrat is not in the president's corner regarding the proposed troop withdrawals from Afghanistan. Representative John Garamendi, he's a Democrat from California, he told Rachel Maddow on MSNBC, it's a no-win policy that will cost an enormous amount of blood and money.
Well, I have great respect for the president and the people that are advising him on this matter, but I see it differently. I think the president unfortunately missed an enormously important opportunity to pivot. The successful killing of bin Laden was a pivot point to move back to the original strategy of going after the terrorists, wherever they happen to be in the world. Instead, we are now mired down in a very long-term horizon of nation building and fighting in the middle of a five-way civil war in Afghanistan. It is a no-win policy, and it's going to cost us an enormous amount of blood, men and women maimed, and an enormous amount of money. It's going to go on for a long time, and it's not the right place to be, and it's not the right strategy.
Well, former House Speaker and 2012 GOP presidential candidate Newt Gingrich phoned into America's Radio News yesterday for an exclusive interview, and he was asked about staffers who abandoned his campaign, which he doesn't seem to think is too much of a problem.
The people who have been with me over the last 10 or 12 years, all but one of them are still there. So the outside consultants and the people that were brought in who came out of more normal politics found that our style and our approach, which is, as you point out, very idea-oriented, very oriented to controversial proposals, very willing to debate big issues, that approach, I think, made the consultants very nervous. And so I'm not a conventional politician. This is not a conventional campaign.
All right, coming up at America's Radio News, it was breaking news here moments ago. Two key Republicans getting up from the table on these budget talks and walking away, saying they don't want to come back until the White House engages in this discussion and actually gets serious, in their words, about our debt in this country.
And could New York become the sixth state to legalize gay marriage? A lot of gay couples are hoping so.
And the picture on the jobs front, it is getting worse. We'll tell you more about that coming up on America's Radio News. Naturally, this is where America's News breaks.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news so you don't have to. If it breaks today, hear it today when we come back to America's Radio News. Reliable and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
34 minutes past the top of the hour. Glad you're here, everybody. It's America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It's Thursday, June 23rd. Here's what's happening.
Starting next month, we will be able to remove 10,000 of our troops from Afghanistan by the end of this year. And we will bring home a total of 33,000 troops by next summer.
The president lays out America's strategy for withdrawal from Afghanistan.
The poll numbers that Obama's been down lately and the election coming up, this is just another one of his strategies to try to get the votes. And he needs to keep our hands off of our men and women and let them successfully complete their mission.
But a Gold Star mom says she's tired of the president playing politics with the lives of our troops.
I think you find that the vast majority of law enforcement officers recognize the importance of this because their jails are being crowded by people who are illegally in our country, and it's costing them and their budgets at the local level a huge amount of money.
And defending a tough new immigration law in Georgia.
We're crossing the country and circling the globe to find all the breaking news. 35 minutes past the top of the hour, time for the top stories in the news, and here is Lori London.
Thanks, Chris. President Obama announced last night that all the 33,000 additional U.S. forces he ordered to Afghanistan in December of 2009 will be home within 15 months. The president said 10,000 of the surge forces would withdraw by the end of the year and the other 23,000 would leave Afghanistan by September of 2012. At the same time, Obama said the drawdown would help the U.S. begin to refocus attention and resources on efforts to resolve economic and other problems and to unify a politically divided nation.
The Congressional Budget Office released a report yesterday saying that our debt crisis is severe and getting more critical by the moment. Two key Republicans have pulled out of high-profile budget talks today, saying that President Obama needs to address Democratic demands for tax increases and needs to reduce the national debt. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, he's a Republican from Virginia, said the talks to raise the $14.3 trillion debt ceiling while cutting the budget won't go anywhere until Mr. Obama weighs in on requests for tax hikes that Republicans blatantly oppose. Given this impasse, I will not be participating in today's meeting, and I believe it is time for the president to speak clearly and resolve the tax issue, Cantor said. Mr. Cantor's not alone. Senator John Kyle, he's a Republican from Arizona, also withdrew from the talks. In a joint statement with Republican leader Mitch McConnell, Kyle said the White House and Democrats are insisting on job-killing tax hikes and new spending.
Dozens of gay couples converging on Albany today to witness what would be a historic vote to legalize gay marriage in New York, the sixth state to do so and a potential bellwether in the national gay rights movement. But for that to happen, Governor Andrew Cuomo's considerable political skills are being tested as never before to engineer one of the biggest social changes in a generation. The Democrats have been using a kind of shuttle diplomacy to privately test proposals for additional religious exceptions within the Senate's Republican majority.
The U.S. claims for unemployment benefits rose last week, suggesting little improvement in the labor market this month after employment stumbled also in May. Initial claims for state unemployment benefits climbed 9,000 to a seasonally adjusted 429,000, the Labor Department said yesterday. The prior week's figure was revised up from 420,000.
Churchill Downs workers scrambling to corral horses driven from their collapsing barns when a possible tornado hit the famed Kentucky Derby horse track yesterday. And officials are still trying to decide when races can resume after several buildings, including the chapel, were damaged. The National Weather Service hasn't yet confirmed that a tornado it was tracking on radar did that damage last night or whether it was gusting straight-lined winds.
Let's get you out to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by is Brett Larson. He's a tech guru here at America's Radio News. Also an Emmy Award-winning technology reporter and the head of Brett Larson Media. Mr. Larson, welcome back to America's Radio News.
Hi, Brett.
Hey, guys. Good to be here.
Okay, you know what, man?
I don't mind the background sound.
Yeah, what are you doing, if I may ask?
Are you doing gadget stuff?
I got stuck in a heavy sound pour when I ran out to get my lunch. It's like torrential rain right now in Manhattan.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Leave it to the tech guy to leave the most simple thing like an umbrella behind. Hey, look, I wanted to ask you about the iPhone 5 rumors. Now, we ask you about this every time because Lori is desperate for her iPhone 5. So let's lead off with that. We're hearing that this is closer to a reality, yes?
That may actually be the case. What's starting to happen is the manufacturers of all the individual parts are coming forward and saying that their orders are up for the different things that are needed to go into the phone. So Lori, it's looking like a reality.
Nice. When?
It may. I would put my money on the September time frame, only because that gets it in time for back to school and for you miss the back to school, but you get the holiday market.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's definitely one of my needed school supplies. I can tell you that, Brett. So tell us more about what you know about. I understand they may be trying to compete with the Android phones. Rivaling Google. What are you hearing about the new iPhone?
Well, you know, we're hearing that it's going to have a better camera on it. They always like to beef the camera up. And also, what's going to be interesting to see is how Apple handles the fact that they now have two different cell carriers that they provide the phone for, Verizon and AT&T, which have two completely different cell phone networks. The two networks aren't compatible with each other. As you know, you can't take the AT&T phone to a Verizon store and get it to work.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see if they go with the one phone design.
So do you hear any more about what the phone may do that's different or what may be better about it?
Well, it's definitely going to be faster. It's going to have a faster chip inside of it, so the phone will work quicker. It will more than likely be able to do HD video streaming, which is huge, especially with the new cell phone networks that have more capacity for data. So what you're going to see with that is the ability to, you know, stream high-definition movies to your cell phone over these new long-term evolution video networks or cell phone networks.
Okay, so let's talk about something else. By the way, I want to let the folks know we're talking to Brett Larson. He's a tech guru here at America's Radio News. Let's talk about Ford. They've developed a voice recognition system called Sync. Now we're hearing that Ford is going to team up with Nuance Communications to develop Sync so it actually understands the intent of your voice when you give commands. So I'm assuming you can say, turn on the radio, right? And the radio comes on.
Yeah, you know, my first experience with the Ford Sync was pretty clunky and cumbersome. It's a lot of Q&A with your car. So I'm glad to see that they're teaming up with Nuance to make it easier. Because literally it would be like, turn on stereo, change to radio, it was this very strangely interactive menu system. So I'm glad to see that you're going to be able to just speak commands to it. I mean, that's kind of the holy grail in voice recognition is the ability to just say, answer my cell phone and not say, have to give a specific command, like pick up the phone. That's what it'll be good to see it work out.
Are you saying our cars will be reading our minds now?
I certainly hope not.
Yeah, that could be bad
news.
If
my car could read my mind, the horn would honk a lot more.
Really?
Right. Brett Larson, tech guru for America's Radio News, also Emmy Award-winning technology reporter, the head of Brett Larson Media. Always appreciate your perspective here on America's Radio News.
Stay dry over there in Manhattan.
Yeah. All right, thank you. I'll try.
Talk to you soon. Coming up on America's Radio News, the House will vote to cut funding for military operations from the United States in Libya. We'll tell you about that.
And a Marine reservist detained during a security scare near the Pentagon last week, now linked to potentially other shootings.
And more problems for Lilo. Lindsay Lohan, yes, as if her house arrest weren't enough. There's more on the horizon here for the troubled starlet, and we'll tell you about it. Coming up on America's Radio News, this is where the nation's news breaks.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News. If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
Glad you joined us, everybody. It is 49 minutes past the top of the hour here on America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, one of the nation's foremost experts on survey writing compared McKinsey & Company's controversial healthcare study to a push poll, calling into further question whether its results can be trusted as even a snapshot of employer sentiment. A senior research fellow at the Center for Survey Research at the University of Massachusetts said, quote, there's no doubt the answers one would get after priming respondents the way they did would be expected to include more expressed interest in the possibility of not insuring employees than a question asked in a non-primed context. McKinsey's study concluded employers are fairly likely to rescind insurance benefits after the health care law takes full effect in 2014. The firm claims to stand by the result, though it now admits the results of the survey aren't predictive. However, the results were based on some curious questions pasted in full, designed to lead survey takers to conclusions at odds with the majority of expert analysis.
The House of Representatives expected to vote this week on a proposal to cut off funds for U.S. military hostilities in Libya. Lawmakers in the Republican majority actually said this yesterday. The measure, which is still being drafted, would ban funding for U.S. participation in combat missions, such as drone attacks in the NATO-led air war, said Representative Howard McKeon. He's the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. It would not have funding for hostilities. The drones couldn't be used for bombing, McKeon told reporters. A vote is likely to come tomorrow.
Well, a Marine reservist who was detained during a security scare near the Pentagon last week has been linked to the shootings last year at the Marine Corps Museum in Quantico and several other D.C. area military recruitment stations. Ballistic evidence appears to link Jonathan Maleku to the shootings. He's being held without bail on unrelated larceny charges involving car break-ins that happened after the shootings. He has not yet been charged in last week's incident or the building shootings.
Just when we thought it was over with Lindsay Lohan, you know, she was put on house arrest, Lori London.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's getting out of the house, apparently, today. A Los Angeles prosecutor say Lohan will return to court so a judge can consider whether she violated her probation while serving house arrest. This according to reporting in USA Today today. While neither her spokesperson, Steve Honig, or the district attorney spokesman, Sandy Gibbons, could offer details of her violations, the entertainment site TMZ reporting that Lohan, who's only 24, can you believe this?
No.
Tested positive for alcohol earlier this month after a barbecue at her house. Lohan told Lifestyle just this week, alcohol is not in my house, so it's just not part of my life. Sources tell TMZ the LA County Probation Department will ask Judge Stephanie Saunter to take Lohan off house arrest and put her right back in the LA County jail.
Oh, man. Mm. Gosh, why doesn't that girl just get it together, girl? Get it together. Well, the Harvard University classmates of Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg are ending the legal battle made famous by the Hollywood movie The Social Network. In a one-paragraph court filing, Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss said they would accept a settlement that was worth $65 million when they agreed, which they agreed upon in 2008. The twins had sought to undo the settlement of $20 million cash and $45 million in stock. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against the twins, who said Wednesday they will now forego a trip to the U.S. Supreme Court.
We all know that President Obama, he actually addressed the nation last night, outlining his plan for withdrawing troops from Afghanistan, from that theater. President Obama said in his address last night that it's time to start focusing our needs here at home, saying that our strength abroad depends on our strength domestically.
Above all, we are a nation whose strength abroad has been anchored in opportunity for our citizens here at home. Over the last decade, we have spent $1 trillion on war at a time of rising debt and hard economic times. Now we must invest in America's greatest resource, our people. We must unleash innovation that creates new jobs and industries while living within our means. We must rebuild our infrastructure and find new and clean sources of energy. And most of all, after a decade of passionate debate, we must recapture the common purpose that we shared at the beginning of this time of war.
For our nation draws strength from our differences. And when our union is strong, no hill is too steep. No horizon is beyond our reach. America, it is time to focus on nation building here at home.
Carl Eikenberry, the U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, publicly denounced President Karzai's criticism of the American war effort, calling his comments hurtful and inappropriate. He delivered the comments over the weekend, but CBS News uncovered the audio yesterday.
I must tell you that I find occasional comments from some of your leaders hurtful and inappropriate. When we hear ourselves being called occupiers and worse, and our generous aid programs are being dismissed as totally ineffective and the source of all corruption, our pride is offended, and we begin to lose our inspiration to carry on. Mothers and fathers of fallen soldiers, spouses of soldiers who have lost arms and legs, children of those who have lost their lives in this country, they ask themselves about the meaning of their loved ones' sacrifice. When Americans who are serving in your country at great cost in terms of our lives and treasures, when they hear themselves compared with occupiers, told that they are only here to advance their own narrow interest and likened to the brutal enemies of the Afghan people, my people in turn, they're filled with confusion and they grow weary of our effort here.
We have $14.3 trillion in our national debt right now. We had the Congressional Budget Office come out yesterday and give a dire prediction that pretty soon our GDP will be eclipsed by our debt. It was a sobering report coming out from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. Now, one Democrat says, forget about the debt. Let's get on with jobs. That's according to Senator Chuck Schumer, a Democrat from New York. He says that we need to put jobs first when it comes to the deficit talks. He says the deficit is not the only detriment to our economy.
We have a message today. Put jobs first. Deficit reduction alone is not a cure for what ails our economy. We need to spur job creation as well. The debt ceiling deal needs to deal with both. We're open-minded as to what kinds of jobs ideas to include. There are many. Many of us would prefer an investment in infrastructure. That's a top priority of the Business Chamber of Commerce. We'd also like the idea of investing in clean energy jobs of the future. But we are also open to hiring incentives, perhaps in the form of a payroll tax cut for employers.
Well, it's time to get dirty, Chris.
Okay.
You like to get dirty?
Once in a while.
In the mud with your kids, right?
Yeah, exactly,
The gentleman known as Mike Rowe, he is a host for the star of one of the most popular shows on the Discovery Channel, Dirty Jobs.
Oh, yeah, I love that show.
We're keeping it clean here. Mike is also a champion for the working man. He sat down with CNBC to talk about what it means to have a good job in America during these trying economic times, and he says the country seems to have a dysfunctional relationship with work.
If I were to impersonate a social anthropologist, I might say that we just fell too deeply in love with one particular form of knowledge. And that's the kind of knowledge that typically comes with a four-year degree. I wouldn't disparage it. I wouldn't trade mine for anything. But the fact is, places like where I am today, places all over the country, are full of really smart people doing very specified things. And to in any way suggest that level of learning is on some different level, that it's alternative education, that's just crazy. And when you see terms like alternative education just become immersed in our lexicon, you start to realize that we really have fundamentally started to change. It's not just our relationship with work, it's the definition of what a good job is. And if anything good comes out of this show, aside from maggots, a few poop jokes and some laughs, you know, it'll be the idea that parents can sit down with their kids and really seriously look at the benefits of learning a skill and mastering a trade.
Yeah, you know what? He brings up a great point. When I was in school, that was the big emphasis. You know, the jobs that did involve working with your hands were so looked down upon. You know, they wanted the more, the computer science, which is all valuable stuff, but, you know, maybe we've lost a little something here in this country about the guys that get in there, fix
our
cars.
Absolutely, they get down and dirty. And
build
and
our houses.
You know, there's a real art to that, absolutely.
Exactly. Coming up on America's Radio News, two key Republicans, they're walking away from the debt talks. We'll tell you who they are and why coming up next.
And the Energy Department says the U.S. is releasing 30 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
And Josh Willis is an oceanographer with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. We'll ask him about this mass extinction proposed for the nation's oceans and for the world's oceans. Coming up next on America's Radio News.
from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
6 minutes past the top of the hour, keeping you informed on all the news from every angle. That's what we do at America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for joining us today. It is Thursday, June 23rd. Here's what's happening.
So as we strengthen the Afghan government and security forces, America will join initiatives that reconcile the Afghan people, including the Taliban.
Talking with the Taliban, the president insists reconciliation can only happen by discussions with the terror groups.
We've got an awful lot invested here, and I'm concerned about any precipitous withdrawal of our troops that would jeopardize the success that we've made.
The Speaker of the House has concerns about Obama's Afghan withdrawal strategy.
We don't have a precise read on why this slower pace of growth is persisting.
And the money man, Ben Bernanke, admits he's perplexed by America's sluggish economy.
We're sweeping the nation and watching the world for all the latest news.
And welcome to it, everybody. It's America's Radio News. Lori London having a look right now at oil prices. They are down significantly, about $4. That's down 4%.
Mm-hmm.
On word that the president is releasing 30 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. So it's having a negative effect on oil companies.
Absolutely. The Energy Department says the U.S. is releasing 30 million barrels of oil. It's part of an international effort to make up for the loss in supply from the disruption in Libya's production. The release coincides with another 30 million barrels to be released in the coming month from other nations in coordination with the International Energy Agency. U.S. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu said the reserve is currently at a record 727 million barrels in storage. And he said the situation in Libya has caused a loss of roughly 1.5 million barrels of oil per day, particularly light sweet crude from global markets.
Two key Republicans pulled out of high-profile budget talks today, saying President Obama needs to address Democratic demands that tax increases are needed to reduce the nation's debt. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, a Republican from Virginia, said the talks to raise the $14.3 trillion debt ceiling while cutting the budget won't go anywhere until Mr. Obama weighs in on requests for tax hikes that Republicans oppose. Given this impasse, I will not be participating in today's meeting, and I believe it is time for the president to speak clearly and resolve this tax issue, Cantor said. Also leaving, Senator John Kyle withdrew from those talks in a joint statement with Republican leader Mitch McConnell. Kyle said the White House and Democrats are insisting on job-killing tax hikes and new spending.
President Obama last night announcing that all 33,000 additional U.S. forces he ordered into Afghanistan in December of 2009 will be home within 15 months. The president said 10,000 of the surge forces would withdraw by the end of this year, and the other 23,000 would leave Afghanistan by September 2012. At the same time, the president said the drawdown would help the U.S. begin to refocus attention and resources on efforts to resolve economic and other problems and to unify a politically divided nation.
Spending cuts and job creation. Can't we do both? Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat from Nevada, says that job creation is necessary to get the economy on the right track, but the Republicans are focusing too heavily on spending cuts.
Economists tell us that reducing spending is only half the equation. The other half is measures to create jobs. Republicans have shown they're willing to block even the most straightforward, unobjectionable, common sense, bipartisan measures that we bring to the floor. Measures that have passed in the past by unanimous consent on a number of occasions. We can't afford to wait for our friends on the other side of the aisle to block issue after issue after issue, putting their own political interests ahead of what's right for our economy. We need to continue to put jobs first, and we'll continue doing that on the floor of the United States Senate. But given the urgency of our economic situation, we need job-creating solutions to be part of this now.
With the latest report from the Congressional Budget Office showing that America could face a huge surge in the debt in the very near future, freshman Congresswoman Kristi Noem, a Republican from South Carolina, tells Fox News that We need to cut much more in spending, and the solution is not to hike up taxes.
The situation even gets worse if those tax cuts were to go away. That's the situation, is no matter what, we're in a situation where we're going downhill. So the solution all along, and what we've continuously been saying, is that the answer is not to raise taxes. When I talk to people every day, what I tell them is we've got the most predictable financial crisis this country's ever faced coming. And the fact that we don't have a plan out of this president is a failure in leadership. We've got people out here in D.C. who are choosing not to address it because they want to get reelected again, and it's just wrong. We need to change the way that we do business and spend our money. We want significant cuts. We want reforms to know that we can't get into this position again, and we start bending that cost curve towards a balanced budget. That resonates back home with the American people. They understand the need to balance a budget.
A Southwest Airlines pilot has been disciplined for about 2 minutes of profanity-laced comments, which were heard by controllers and crew members when his mic was stuck open for everyone to hear. Now, most of this we can't play for you, but here's a small sample.
Now I'm back in Houston, which is easily one of the ugliest bases. I mean, it's all these old dudes and grannies, and there's like maybe a handful of key chicks.
Okay, someone's got a stuck mic and telling us all about their endeavors. We don't need to hear that.
It's not really funny if you listen to the whole thing. It's pretty nasty.
But isn't it
funny that these people are like, hello?
Isn't it that U.S. Airways commercial that says, want to get away?
Yeah.
Was that a U.S. Air?
Gosh, what are those pilots really talking about in there?
Yeah, I know. And this was a Southwest Airlines. It wasn't. All right, anyway. Mm. All right, coming up on America's Radio News. The Fed lowering the outlook for economic growth here in the United States. We'll give you the report.
And hey, Harry Potter's adventures going digital.
And hey, Josh Willis, oceanographer with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. There's a report out there saying that we could be facing a mass extinction in our world's oceans. Is that true? We'll talk to Josh Willis about it. Coming up on America's Radio News, this is where the nation's news breaks.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News. Breaking news and the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
19 minutes past the top of the hour. This is where the nation gets its information. America's Radio News. Glad you're there, everybody. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Well, for the first time, minorities make up a majority of babies in the U.S., part of a sweeping race change and growing age divide between mostly white older Americans and predominantly minority youths that could reshape government policies. Preliminary census estimates also show the share of African-American households headed by women made up of mostly single mothers now exceeds African-American households with married couples, a sign of declining U.S. marriages overall, but also continuing challenges for black youths without involved fathers.
The Federal Reserve downgraded its outlook for the U.S. economy, lowering its prediction for annual growth to less than 3% of gross domestic product. Now, the Fed expects the economy will grow between 2.7% and 2.9% in 2011. That's down from a 3.1% to 3.3% estimate back there in April. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke acknowledged yesterday that the recovery has hit a rough patch.
France will pull its 4,000 troops out of Afghanistan on the same staggered timetable as the U.S. withdrawal. That from President Nicolas Sarkozy today. He's helping pave the way for drawdowns by other allies. France's withdrawal will take place in coordination with allies and Afghan officials and in, quote, a proportional manager comparable to the withdrawal of American troops.
Let's get you out to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by, Josh Willis. He's an oceanographer and a climatologist with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Mr. Willis, welcome to America's Radio News.
Hi, Josh.
Thanks for having me. Great. Good to be here, Chris and Lori.
I wanted to talk to you about this report that came out outlining the fact that we may be in for a mass extinction in our oceans. Of course, a lot of folks harken back to a few years ago when the famous actor Ted Danson also made the same prediction, saying within 10 years, the oceans would be devoid of life. That never came to fruition. He was basing on some research of the day. How is this research any different from back then?
Well, I think, I don't think this comes as a huge surprise. You know, we have put an enormous amount of pressure on the marine ecosystems. You have to remember that there's 7 billion people on the planet, and we harvest a lot of sea life out of the ocean for various purposes, mostly food. But we also are warming up the planet. We're heating up the oceans. We're adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, and this goes into the oceans and causes acidification, which has a big impact on certain kinds of life forms. And so, you know, it's really no surprise that we're putting a huge amount of pressure on the ocean ecosystems, and that the predictions for the future under this scenario are pretty dire.
So you're saying that we should take this report very seriously, that we are at risk of literally entering a phase of extinction?
Well, you know, species go extinct all the time, and what we know is that extinctions today are elevated quite high above sort of background normal levels, and that a lot of this has to do with human activity. Some of it is global warming and climate change. Some of it is habitat destruction, and some of it is just all of us eating them. But these things put real pressure on our planet's ecosystems, and it's something we have to think about, I think.
Yeah, so we all know how vital the oceans are to our climate in general here, how much we rely on them for recreation. They're part of the circle of life, as it were. Now, did this report give us a timetable?
Well, no, I think there's a lot of uncertainty, and in fact, you know, there's actually a lot of opportunity. I think what we know is that there are policy decisions that we can make. They may be tough ones. They may be tough, but nevertheless, we can do something about things like overfishing. We can do something about climate change, about adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. And so, you know, there is hope. We have tools in our toolbox for dealing with these
right.
things. But there's some tough decisions afoot, I think.
Does not the ocean actually release carbon dioxide as well?
Well, the ocean exchanges carbon with the atmosphere, but you know, as you know, humans are adding carbon to the atmosphere. About 40% of the carbon that's in the atmosphere right now has come from human emissions of these gases by burning fossil fuels and the like. And about half of what we emit winds up going into the oceans. So actually, right now, there is a net input of carbon into the oceans, and that's what's driving the oceans to become more acidic and causing problems for sea creatures that like to form shells. You know, they form shells by precipitating calcium out of the ocean and turn it into little critters and their skeletons, and they have a hard time doing that when the ocean's too acidic.
I was reading about this research, and it was talking about how the coral reefs are literally looking bleached. I mean, I personally, you know, I've done a lot of snorkeling in some beautiful places in the world, and it's just amazing to see these coral reefs. And you know, this sounds as if, you know, we could be in danger of actually losing our coral reefs. And if that's in fact true, what does this mean for the entire ecosystem?
Well, of course, coral reefs are one of the most diverse ecosystems on the planet. And they support life, which sustains human life as well, all the way up the food chain. And so they're really important ecosystems. And yes, they're under a lot of pressure. You know, the acidification affects them. The warming affects them a lot, and even sea level rise. Sea level is rising at about an inch a decade right now. That's the fastest it's been rising in the last 2,000 years. And as it rises, then the corals have to move, they have to grow. And as the water warms up, often corals only live in a very narrow range of temperatures, and so it's difficult for a coral reef to pick up and move. It takes a long time, and if the changes are very sudden, then it's possible that that large losses could occur.
We're speaking with Josh Willis, oceanographer and climatologist with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. So do you think that we will get a grip on this, or is it hopeless? I mean, you said there were things we could do, but is that really feasible, or are we just on a downward spiral? I mean, not to be an alarmist, certainly.
Well, no. I mean, look, I think there are things we can do, but they're tough things. You know, restricting fishing hurts some people's economic viability, and in restricting carbon dioxide emissions may have an impact on the economy. You know, there could be good things that come out of it too. I think there'll be pluses and minuses in the economy, but you know, these are tough decisions, but I think we do have the potential to avert some of the biggest disasters that are afoot with climate change and the human footprint on the Earth. But it's going to take some bold leadership, I think.
All right, Josh Willis, oceanographer, climatologist with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Sir, appreciate your perspectives here on America's Radio News.
Thank you.
You bet. You're coming up here on America's Radio News. President Obama catching some heat for tapping that strategic oil reserve, not only from Republicans, but from Democrats, too. We'll give you the report.
Increased trouble for the economy. More Americans convinced we're headed in the wrong direction.
And we will talk about the economy with Phil Kirpin. He's the vice president for policy at Americans for Prosperity. It all comes your way next on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news so you don't have to. If it breaks today, hear it today when we come back to America's Radio News. Broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the top of the hour. It's America's Radio News. Happy you're on board, everybody. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for joining us today. It is Thursday, June 23rd. Here's what's happening.
So as we strengthen the Afghan government and security forces, America will join initiatives that reconcile the Afghan people, including the Taliban.
Talking with the Taliban, the president insists reconciliation can only happen by discussions with the terror groups.
We've got an awful lot invested here, and I'm concerned about any precipitous withdrawal of our troops that would jeopardize the success that we've made.
The Speaker of the House has concerns about Obama's Afghan withdrawal strategy.
We don't have a precise read on why slower pace of growth is persisting.
And the money man, Ben Bernanke, admits he's perplexed by America's sluggish economy.
We're sweeping the nation and watching the world for all the latest news.
Glad you made the appointment, everybody. Here it is, 35 minutes past the top of the hour. We call it the bottom of the hour in time for the top stories in the news. And here's Lori London.
Thanks, Chris. Well, congressional Democrats leading the criticism of President Obama's troop withdrawal plan from Afghanistan, arguing that his timeline for bringing 33,000 U.S. troops home by next summer isn't fast enough. An initial drawdown of 10,000 troops expected to take place in two phases, with 5,000 troops coming home this summer, 5,000 more at the end of the year. An additional 20,000 plus are to follow by September 2012. From across the aisle, the Republican response to the president's timeline was measured. House Speaker John Boehner warning Obama not to sacrifice the gains the U.S. has made in Afghanistan, while Arizona Senator John McCain said the drawdown was too rash.
Republicans called the Obama administration's plan to tap the Strategic Petroleum Reserve a political move, while some Democrats said the effort was, well, a little too late, a little too little. The U.S. release of 30 million barrels of oil accounts for about half the amount the International Energy Agency plans to deliver to the market to ease shortages of Middle East supplies triggered by civil war in Libya. The Energy Department said that today in a statement. Republicans joined the oil industry in saying the release wasn't needed and more drilling is needed. The plan would have been more timely had oil been released when Libyan supplies were first disrupted. That, according to Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee Chairman Jeff Bingham. He's a Democrat from New Mexico, as I said. U.S. has 727 million barrels of crude oil stored in caverns along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. The reserve was established to counter disruptions after the oil embargo from the Arabs in 1973 and 1974. The U.S. has released oil from the stock 17 times since 1985, most recently in 2008 and during Hurricanes Gustav and Ike off the Gulf Coast of Mexico.
James Whitey Bulger, an alleged Boston organized crime boss who was on the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitive list, has been captured. He'd been on the run since 1995. Bulger, who was taken into custody with his longtime girlfriend, Catherine Elizabeth Gregg, will make their first court appearance today. The pair was arrested from a residence in Santa Monica, California. On Tuesday, the FBI had begun airing a 30-second public service announcement centered on Gregg, who was wanted for harboring a fugitive. The public service announcement listed her characteristics such as loving dogs and having multiple plastic surgeries. Now, Bulger is charged with 19 counts of murder, along with conspiracy to commit murder, extortion, drugs, and money laundering.
President Obama getting some serious criticism over his plans to withdraw troops from Afghanistan because some are worried about pulling troops out too quickly. But at least one person thinks we're not withdrawing fast enough, and that's 2012 GOP presidential candidate Ron Paul. He's a Republican from Texas who tells ABC News that the troops should all come home right now.
We need to have a significant change in foreign policy, which means that all the troops come home and turn that country back over to the Afghans and let them deal with it.
Yeah, so all the troops come home now, today.
Sure, well, I mean, you can't do it in 24 hours, but you can make the announcement and you can start the withdrawal from that country because there's nothing for us to be gained.
They came in search of spiritual enlightenment during a Sweat Lodge seminar held by self-help guru James Arthur Ray. He told his seminar participants that it would be hellacious and that they would feel like they were dying, but would do so metaphorically. Unfortunately, three people did die following that October 2009 ceremony. And yesterday, after only 10 years of hours of deliberations, he faced the jury's announcement.
Be the jury, duly impaneled and sworn in the above entitled action and upon our oaths, do find the defendant, James Arthur Ray, on the offense of negligent homicide, guilty. The above is the unanimous finding of the jury, signed foreman of the jury.
All right, let's get you out to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by is Phil Kirpin. He's the Vice President for Policy at Americans for Prosperity. Mr. Kirpin, welcome to America's Radio News.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, the news breaking today that two key Republicans, Senator Kyle from Arizona and Mr. Cantor from Virginia, getting up from these budget talks. I'm hearing the word collapse in reference to these talks now. Where does this leave us?
Well, I think it's now more essential than ever that the Senate Democrats finally put their cards on the table and propose a budget, something they've refused to do now for 2 years. We've seen what the Republicans had to offer from the House. We've seen what the White House had to offer. Not a single Senate Democrat voted for the House budget or for the White House budget. The White House budget went zero votes for, 97 votes against in the Senate. They said they were waiting for the outcome of these Biden-led negotiations. Those seem to be at an impasse. I think Harry Reid and the Democrats have got to say what they're for so that we can move this debate forward.
Well, sounds to me like there were some recommendations given to them by their bipartisan commission. It was a combination of tax increases and budget cuts. Now, it doesn't seem like the president has really embraced that, but it does seem like Democrats are in favor of raising some taxes. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I'm against it. I think the economy right now does not need tax hikes. And I think from a long-term budget perspective, tax revenues are going to be at their historical average of around 18% of GDP within this decade. The issue is not tax rates. The issue is spending is entirely out of line with historical norms. It's about 25% of the economy right now. The historical norm is about 20%. We've got to get the spending side under control. And I think trying to raise taxes right now could actually weaken our economic recovery and make it more difficult to solve our fiscal and economic problems. So I'm with the Republicans on that. The Democrats, though, as you point out, they seem to want to do this all with tax hikes. They don't really want to talk about reforming Medicare or Social Security or Medicaid. They don't want to talk about changes to the discretionary spending programs. And so you have to wonder what they're really for. There were some recommendations in that deficit commission that probably could get a lot of bipartisan support if they were offered seriously by the president. But he hasn't really embraced even the recommendations of his own commission to this point.
Yeah, we actually heard from Javier Becerra earlier today. He's a Democrat from California, being asked point blank by Neil Cavuto, you know, which entitlements would you tackle? How would you title entitlement reform? He wouldn't give one answer. He wouldn't give one recommendation. And it seems for their constituency, the Democrats are caught between a rock and a hard place. They know something has to be done with entitlements, but they are very reticent to get out there and put anything on the record, which I think goes back to your original point, Mr. Kirpin, is the reason why Democrats refuse to do their duty and put out a budget.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think the political calculation that Democrats have made is let's just sit back, not offer something, and just take shots at what the Republicans offer because a lot of it will be unpopular. And in fact, the changes to Medicare that Paul Ryan has talked about are unpopular. But, you know, there is no popular choice that's realistic at this point. That's the problem. If we don't do anything, Medicare is going to be severely cut. It's going to be rationed by bureaucrats and so on. So it's not really an option to go with the status quo. And unfortunately, there seems to have been a political political calculation among Democrats that it's better not to offer any solutions. I think it's very unfortunate for the country.
Well, let's talk about something else here. That it's kind of tied into budgetary concerns, but the Republicans are working very hard to try to defund the FCC to implement this net neutrality thing that they've been going after. Give a brief explanation about what net neutrality is and why you think it's a bad idea for the nation.
Yeah, net neutrality is the idea of government regulators requiring all of the traffic that travels over the networks that make up the Internet to be treated the same way, all the little zeros and ones to be treated the same way, which sounds wonderful in theory, but in practice it would cause a lot of problems. It would undermine investment and innovation and so on, because these networks have gotten very, very sophisticated. The routers have millions of lines of code to make sure that your streaming video gets there on time, it doesn't have hiccups and stall and so on. Things like email that could wait an extra 10 seconds, that can be deprioritized slightly. And so there's a lot of sophistication in these networks that this type of regulation threatens to upset. It also would prevent experimentation with different kinds of business models where content providers might pay for expedited delivery and so forth. My view has been the Internet has worked extremely well with no regulation over the past 10 years. It just seems crazy to risk bringing government into this. The FCC did vote to do that in December, but it's 6 months later and they've still not published the final order, so it's not taken effect yet. I think they're worried that once they publish it, it'll be challenged in the courts and in Congress. And so it's a weird situation we're in right now where they've officially voted for these regulations, but they've not yet published them for them to take effect. But if and when they do that, I expect we'll see a vote in the Senate on overturning it.
We're speaking with Phil Kirpin, Vice President for Policy at Americans for Prosperity. So Phil, hypothetically speaking, at this point, if the government does start regulating the Internet and the FCC does have a say, what do you ultimately see happening, or how do you see it affecting the web?
Well, in the near term, I think the biggest impact will be that there will be less private sector investment in continuing to innovate and build out these broadband networks. And that in itself will be a bad thing for consumers, as the Internet has been getting better and better and better every year. If it sort of stays where it is and it stops to innovate, we will lose out on things that we might not even imagine that would have been invented or would have been added as new features in the absence of regulation. And then I think over time, potentially, you would deter enough investment that the service degrades and the Internet becomes less usable. And at that point, I think we'll be forced as taxpayers to subsidize it. That's kind of how this works. First, you regulate something to undermine it. Then you're forced as a taxpayer to subsidize it. And I think that'll come with strings attached and even more government control. I just think it's a very dangerous road to start down on.
Phil, the president also making some news here. This will be the last question we talked to you about. And I know oil is not exactly your thing, but I do know you know business. So the president actually releasing 30 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and oil is getting hammered today on the stock exchanges, losing 4% of its value, down $4. A lot of folks would say, hey, this is a little justice for some folks that have seen their oil prices, their gas prices being driven up by these speculators. It seems the exact opposite is happening, as demand is weakening now with our economies across the world falling, by the wayside, it seems, going down every single day. Demand is down for oil. So here comes the President of the United States actually poking in the eye of some of these oil companies and saying, I'm going to release more oil onto the market. And that's just dropping the bottom out. And a lot of folks would say that's poetic justice.
Well, I think the commodity prices were already coming down as the dollar's been strengthening, and I think that the timing of this is very, very odd. I think that basically this is a move to get political credit for market changes that were happening anyway, and I think it's a misuse of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is supposed to be for national security situations where we have a supply disruption. We have that available for us. Now it'll have to be replenished and repurchased at some future date. So I think this is basically a political attempt to get credit for a softening in oil prices that was already happening anyway. We are seeing a near-term market reaction, but ultimately 30 billion barrels is not going to change the fundamental. 30 million barrels, rather, is not going to change the fundamentals. And even 90, if you look at what IEA is doing today as well, it's not going to change the fundamentals. If we really want to bring down prices in the long term and bring down long-term expectations, which will then, of course, affect the present price, case, we've got to be much more serious about developing our own resources in the U.S., and I hope we'll move in that direction.
Phil Kirpin, Vice President for Policy, Americanist for Prosperity. Appreciate it, sir. Coming up here on America's Radio News, Hamid Karzai reacts to the president's speech last night. We'll talk about that.
And Casey Anthony's parents deny a report that they think their daughter's guilty in the murder of their granddaughter.
And we will talk about the trials and tribulations of one Lindsay Lohan. All comes your way next on America's Radio News.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News. If we break the story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
And welcome back to it, everybody. It is time to get you caught up on the top stories. Glad you're with us. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for joining us today. It is almost Friday, Chris. Almost Friday. George and Cindy Anthony's attorney have denied a media report the couple think their daughter, Casey Anthony, murdered their granddaughter. Casey Anthony is accused of murdering daughter Kaylee in the summer of 2008 and could face the death penalty if convicted. Attorney Mark Lipman said the family want to know what happened to their granddaughter and under no circumstances want to see Casey Anthony receive the death penalty, but they say, quote, the Anthony family maintains they simply want justice in the case.
The president of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, welcomed President Obama's decision to withdraw more than 30,000 American troops over the next year, calling it the right decision for the interest of both countries. But local leaders and ordinary Afghan people expressed fears of civil war, renewed Taliban encroachments, and even government collapse when the United States leaves. In the mountain districts of eastern Afghanistan, Kandahar province, and in parliament, many expressed deep doubts. The chairman of parliament's Internal Security Committee said, quote, I am totally against Barack Obama's decision to cut the numbers of its soldiers. Our national forces are not well trained and not well equipped.
Well, the Harvard University classmates of Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg are ending the legal battle made famous by the Hollywood movie The Social Network. In a one-paragraph court filing, Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss said they'd accept a settlement that was worth $65 million when agreed upon in 2008. The twins had sought to undo the settlement of $20 million cash and $45 million in stock. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against the twins, who said yesterday that they will forego a trip to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Some are saying it's like putting the kids in charge of the cookie jar. If he becomes president, Republican candidate hopeful Herman Cain proposing a regulatory reduction commission specifically aimed at the Environmental Protection Agency. Who he would ask to put in that commission instead? People who have been affected by the EPA regulations, like the CEO of Shell Oil.
The EPA is the biggest barrier to more permits, more drilling, more shale oil production. So I'm going to have a regulatory reduction commission that I'm going to appoint that's going to go in and determine how we make things move faster. Some regulations we need. I'm not anti-regulation. I'm just anti-too much regulation. And the people on this commission are going to be people who know something about coal, oil, shale oil, natural gas. And they will be people whose businesses or individuals who have been abused by the EPA. If you've been abused by the EPA, like Shell Oil, I'm going to ask the CEO of Shell Oil, would he like to be on this commission and give me some recommendations? The people closest to the problem are the ones who can solve the problem. That's one of my guiding principles.
A federal judge set to decide the fate of Georgia's new immigration law on July 1st. A decision will be made as to whether Georgia moves forward in a manner similar to what Arizona has done on illegal immigration. Georgia's Governor Nathan Deal defended the controversial legislation on Fox News.
You're always going to have opinions that vary across the state. But when you have the four of the largest counties with the largest illegal immigrant population already participating in a federal program to identify and be able to deport individuals who are improperly in our state, I think you'll find that the vast majority of law enforcement officers recognize the importance of this because their jails are being crowded by people who are illegally really in our country, and it's costing them and their budgets at the local level a huge amount of money.
All right, we are done today for America's Radio News, but there are stories we're keeping an eye on. There's two ones, opposite side of the spectrums here. First off, Lindsay Lohan could be heading back to jail because she violated house arrest. We'll keep an eye on that. Plus, we'll also be monitoring what's going on here with this debt negotiations. Two key Republicans walking away. What does that mean for the negotiations?
And will the weekend with the Casey Anthony murder trial wrapped up and sent to the jury? We are on it.
For Lori London, I'm Chris Salcedo. Have a great day. See you back tomorrow for a Friday on America's Radio News.